when you find people who love the world that you love, showing up as your favorite characters, collecting that, you know, unique, hard to find item that's gonna delight you every day, you know, when you get back home, that's really important and a big part of celebrating that fan identity.
Explore the minds and marketing strategies behind today's winning brands and businesses. Tap into the power of the creator economy with Earned by Creator IQ. Here's Connor Begley.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Earned. Today, I've got Stephanie Freed, the CMO of Fandom, on the show. Welcome to the show, Stephanie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You know, I have some other questions planned, but I think your background, we need to talk about it just for a second, because it has caught my attention. And while it might look like family portraits, it is not a family set of family portraits. Can you tell us a little bit about what's on your wall?
Sure. Yeah, it's funny because a lot of people ask me if this is a Zoom background or if it's real, which is also funny and indicative of the world that we're in now. But you can actually see a little bit of a shadow of outside of my window coming in, shining off of the glass. You can hopefully tell that it is real. I also had an interesting conversation with NBC Universal, who asked if I switched it based on who I was speaking to, because there are so many NBCU-based shows here, and I do not, because that would be a huge undertaking. This was tough to put together. But basically, this is a representation of my fandoms and my identities. So a lot of people have portrait walls of their family and friends, and I do have pictures around the house of them as well. But here in my office, I have basically my fan identity behind me. So hopefully when you get on the phone with me, you can start to get an understanding of who I am as a fan and what my favorite fandoms and my favorite characters are that I love. I'm pretty specific in terms of the type of content that I like, which you could probably tell. I enjoy comedies and kind of escaping into other fun, positive worlds when I do have free time to watch TV, which is one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah, we have very aligned tastes. I think we'd probably get along. Of the six that you have there, five are amongst my top 10 at a minimum. So whether that's Ted Lasso or 30 Rock or The Office or Arrested and Parks and Rec, frankly. I got to check out, what was the other one you said? I'm forgetting the name, the one right above your head.
What We Do in the Shadows. Okay. I like to think of myself as the part-time CMO for What We Do in the Shadows. There's the movie and the TV show. I'm a huge fan of the show on FX. It is hilarious, very, very clever and unique. And this is Nadia, who I like to think of as sitting above me and protecting me, which you'll get if you watch the show.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to check that one out. I think it's pretty wild what FX has done, the quality of shows they produced over time. So for those that are unfamiliar with fandom, I'd love you to give just like a 2-minute intro on kind of what fandom is, because, you know, I mean, I think it's a top 50 website globally, like massive traffic, massive audiences and communities, but I don't think everybody knows who they are, who it is. Can you give a quick 2-3 minute intro?
Yeah, of course. So, you know, Fandom is a portfolio company. We have different types of brands and businesses, but overall, the Fandom platform is a platform that attracts over 300 million people every month. So it is huge, and I think fairly ubiquitous in the world of entertainment and gaming. You might not think you've been to Fandom. I promise you, every single person listening to this has been to Fandom and is there often. But the reason you might not know it is because we do a really incredible job of branding the communities against the IPs that they represent. So for example, if you search for Luke Skywalker, I like to say, because everyone knows who Luke Skywalker is, on Google, Fandom will be the first search result, because Fandom has more information about Luke Skywalker than any other site, platform, brand in the world. And when you arrive at the Luke Skywalker page, it has every single detail of everything that ever happened to Luke Skywalker. It's unlimited scroll, and it's part of the Star Wars wiki community that's over 250,000 pages of content.
What?
Unlimited scroll. So, yes. So every detail of every imagined world is documented in our wikis across 300,000 communities, your 50 million pages of content that go on forever on every TV show, movie, game, book, anime, comics, etc.
That is a shocking number. 250,000 pages on Luke Skywalker.
That's great. It's the world's best resource for fans. And then we also have incredible brands that kind of supplement that experience across the fan's journey. So, for example, GameSpot as an editorial brand, Metacritic, the ratings brand, TV Guide. So that's reviews, ratings, how you discover new shows, new games. Right? You validate whether or not they're right for you based on what other people are saying about them or the reviews that you're reading. You decide to buy them. We have a gaming commerce brand called Fanatical where you can buy PC games directly. And then as you're playing those games, Starfield, for example, which was huge, it just came out, you can go into Fandom or Game FAQs, which is another wiki platform that we own, and really know every single detail of how to really thrive within that game and progress within that game and make sure that you're finding every Easter egg and every fun component that you may want to experience. So we really service fans across their full journey, whether it's in entertainment or gaming, across our portfolio.
It's really cool. Again, it's like, you find these really interesting pockets of the internet and the world that a lot of people don't know. And it's like, whoa, like the scale of this is so much bigger than you'd imagine. Taking a step back, I think when you first joined Fandom, and maybe some heritage on Fandom, it was actually, I believe, founded by the same guy who founded Wikipedia, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Is it Jimmy Wales? Is that the right name?
It is Jimmy Wales. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Jimmy's still the chair of our board.
Oh, cool. So it started out as, I believe it was Wiki Cities, I believe. It changed over time. And I think you were kind of right there in 2019 when Fandom really became the brand, or it had been kind of going through this brand transition, but where it was really leaned into from a branding perspective. Can you tell us a little bit about, one, what that was like to go through this, hey, we need to build up this new term, this new brand that maybe not everybody knows about, and any specific learnings or challenges from the time prior to you getting there, as well as to the early stages of your time as CMO?
Yeah, of course. So the Fandom brand name predated me. So when I started, Fandom was already there. But what Fandom meant or what it represented, not even just externally, but internally, right, is something to kind of frame our growth strategies and initiatives against, and our culture too, didn't exist. So when I undertook the work with the team to determine what Fandom meant, what Fandom represented for all of our stakeholders, external partners, our creator community, our admins and editors, our fans, the studios that we work with on official wikis, as well as those who partner with us to help get their message out, and Fan Guardians, our employees. What does Fandom mean to all of those, you know, different groups and holistically together? And so we undertook what I called not a rebrand, but a brand, branding, because it really didn't exist before. And, you know, we really thought about where we wanted to go, our vision, our mission, our brand promise and story, and, you know, what we were moving towards to be the fans' first choice for community and experience. And so we built that out, certainly shared it, but aligned with that also determined what our visual identity was that was associated with bringing that to life and really refreshing the way that we identified ourselves in the world with a new visual identity across all of our platforms and it's internally. And so we've worked on that, our value props and how we speak to and bring that across to our different audiences, as well as what we're building, why we're building it, where we're going as a business, what acquisitions we make and how they fit within that story and within that promise. So we think about it across every decision that we're making across the organization, as well as how we communicate consistently across all of our stakeholders and partners.
Yeah, I think you've got a problem in that you're in charge of branding for a lot of different things, right? Or in charge of marketing for a lot of different things. It's like you've got the fandom brand. And then I think similar to, we had the CMO of Reddit on, you know, their marketing challenges, like their communities are really kind of center stage. And to the Luke Skywalker example, like clearly the case with you guys as well. And then you also have all of these media entities that you guys have acquired or built or integrated that you also have to, you know, have their own separate branding and pillars, et cetera. How do you keep track of all that? Like, how do you manage such a breadth of different properties internally?
So we think about all of our brands, and really more than brands, but what do each of our platforms or sites or products, what do they do for fans? So all kind of grounding in what is the value that we bring to fans across different parts of the fan ecosystem, across their journey and across our brands, and how do those things come together? And then how do those pieces kind of come together in different parts of our experience? So where and how does Metacritic live within fandom? Where does Fanatical live within GameSpot, right? To bring that value. And we also spent a lot of time thinking about the role of brand in each of those places, how important the brand is, the fandom brand, for example, because we have such a large repository of reference content that's so powerful and so powerful that Google, whose mission is to connect people with the best information, recommends us first almost every time for every Imagine World search. People are coming to get that naturally, and they're coming to Wikipedia, and they're coming to the Zelda Wiki or the Minecraft Wiki because they care so much about that IP. So the question is how important is the fandom branding within that experience? Or is it important for us to provide a very positive and engaging experience once they're there? And how do we do that across our brands? So we think about that and the role of brand and the role of marketing, whether paid or organic, across each of our different channels based on the use case and the value for the consumer and the value that brand adds. So we do think about that, you know, brand like TV Guide is our oldest brand, most heritage brand. What does that brand mean? How do we think about that within the context of the strategies that we develop for that brand, where that brand is integrated across our portfolio and how it's integrated across our portfolio? And that informs also where we focus and where we do brand refreshes or focus more on creating a larger framework that we're driving against and where that matters across our portfolio. Because I think what's really interesting about fandom is the fact that we do have lots of different types of businesses that bring people in from different channels for different reasons. And brand as a specific piece has a different level of importance across each aspect of the portfolio.
I have to tell you, your job sounds very hard.
It is.
Like I'm sitting here, like I have a hard enough time with one brand. That is the balancing act there just seems challenging, to say the least.
Yes, it is. I mean, it's funny because, you know, when we talk about competitors and everyone's looking at their competitors and the competitive set, and I think the brands that do the best are the ones that don't think about their competitors so narrowly, right? They think about who they're sharing time and space with in consumers' minds that don't do exactly what they do, but do something that is somewhat interchangeable in terms of the time they're trying to take. You know, YouTube wasn't just competing with other digital video sites. YouTube's competing with Xbox. They're competing for all of your leisure time, right? And for our brands, certainly thinking, you know, in a larger way about how and where we compete, but we also have brands that play in very different spaces. And so we don't have one overall competitor, which, you know, when I was at Condé Nast, it was like, what are your competitors? Hearst, Time, and Meredith, right?
Yeah.
And like, obviously, you're thinking about also Facebook And also,
I was going to say, eventually it became Facebook.
Right. Totally. But yeah. I think even just in terms of like the core competitive space of what are the brands or businesses that play in the same exact space, have similar consumers and similar business models, that's not even very clear cut for most of our brands, even at that level, which is, you know, certainly a challenge and requires a lot of focus of where we lean in and where we don't, much more so, I think, than when you're able to focus on a more singular audience or business problem.
Yeah, I'm curious how you think about, because when you say like alternative competitors, in some ways you have this weird, relationship's the wrong term, but you know, with the social platforms, right? Because you create content, people spend time on your channels as an alternative to social media. But obviously a lot of the content that probably shows up at fandom sites or that gets taken from a fandom site and gets shared onto social is very much collaborative in that way too, right? There's cross-platform sharing and collaboration. How do you think about your relationship with the social networks? How do you guys work with them and work with creators that are maybe on those social networks as well?
Yeah. So I've worked in roles for a long time where we've thought about social as an important marketing channel. And I think social itself, right? And it depends on where you sit in an organization. You know, social is a thing, but to me, social is actually a lot of different things. Right. Mm-hmm. Each social platform is really unique in the way that, you know, the value that consumers get out of those platforms and the reasons they go to them. Right. So Instagram and why you're on Instagram and what you're using Instagram for and what resonates on Instagram is very different from TikTok, and why people are going to TikTok and why they open that app and what they get from it or Snap. They're clearly all also competing with each other and trying to create all the exact same features, which I find very interesting and strange. And I think is like a symptom of the like need to grow, as opposed to being really good at what you're good at and being differentiated. Because I think there's a lot of difference between connecting with your community versus connecting with what's trending in the larger community, which is how TikTok started versus like an Instagram, right? Which Instagram was more intentional around what you're interested in, who you're connected with, and your community, whereas TikTok was much more about discovery of people very much outside of your community along the lines of things that are trending. And people use both of them for, you know, different reasons and purposes. And I think they're all trying to create this super space where you can do anything on any one of them. But I definitely think that brands who have, you know, social teams and strategies do the best when they think about the audience and the use case of each one of those platforms and what's going to resonate, because it's wildly different. You know, we used to initially take a lot of what was happening on, you know, Snapchat Discover and putting it on YouTube, for example, like in the early days, or trying to take, you know, now TikTok and put it on Instagram Reels. But I think even when the form factor is the same, I think that the user need and the reason that they're there is different. So what they're willing to watch and how they're willing to watch is different. So we definitely have different strategies. I wouldn't say at all we're trying to compete with social. I think social networks, I actually think it's very complementary to what we do. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually at this point, and you know, never say never. And you know, I feel like Netflix leadership is always saying all of the things that they will never do, and then they end up doing it. So I never say that. But you know, social spaces, the thing that I love about fandom, and one of the things that we talk about a lot, number one, because it's true, but number two, because I actually do think it's really meaningful, is that it's a very safe space. It's a place where you can be yourself and you are respected and you are welcomed just because you're a fan.
Yep.
Because you're a fan of those stories and of that world, and that world is celebrated and it's enjoyed. It is not a place where you come to complain. It's not a place where you come to say why you hated the most recent episode or even why you loved the most recent episode. It's where you come to immerse yourself in those episodes and find all those great details and fun facts. And so we do have discussions on some of our communities, but they are not pulling IP apart, and they're not the focus of the platform. We do have moderation on them. We make sure that nothing does come up that could be toxic, but it's much more celebratory in tone. I mean, did you know this? Did you enjoy this? And I like that piece of our platform. Social networks tend to sometimes get a little bit more into the toxic space, negative comments and things that bring some of that celebration down. So I leave that to the social networks to have those discussions in terms of what people like or don't like, along with all the other things they love, and for fandom to really celebrate specifically on those immersive worlds and on the celebration of learning and diving in more.
I mean, in a lot of ways, it maps very well to Wikipedia, where Wikipedia is about facts, not opinions. It's like, here's what you need to know about this particular thing. It's just that this is much more in-depth, much more collaborative, not necessarily with the same, you know, it's a different framework in some ways. But yeah, I love that. I'm curious, with regards to those communities, you're in an interesting position in that the communities are a lot of what's driving the company, and they kind of want to exist on their own, right? Like, we're the Luke Skywalker community. But you, of course, want to find ways to accelerate those communities from a marketing perspective. I'm curious, how do you play a role in that without inserting yourself into the conversation or without disrupting the community? Like, how are you a facilitator of those groups?
Yeah, so we think about that a lot for a lot of reasons. And it's a really good question, and it's a really big challenge.
Yeah.
Because we want people to go deep into those communities. And we know that the admins and editors and that audience in particular, which we spend a lot of time getting to know and getting to understand and making sure that we're creating tools for them as well. Some of them are extremely passionate about one community, the community that they spend all their time on. They're diehard Star Trek fans, let's say, and they're on Memory Alpha, and that's where they dedicate all their time. And they want audiences who love Star Trek to come in and to celebrate Star Trek, and they don't care if those people discover the next great Star Trek or Star Trek adjacency or another show or game that they might love. They want them to dive into Star Trek, and they want to hear Star Trek.
Yeah,
there are other admins and editors who love gaming. They love first-person shooter games. And they're, in their own time, have a lot of trouble finding the next first-person shooter game that they're going to love. And they want to enable that discovery for the fans of the wikis that they happen to edit, as well as the other wikis that are available to help them discover more. So we have kind of different personas as well within the creator community. Mm-hmm. And the reason that's important is because when we do get involved, the involvement is really about, how do we create new features, new functionality that is either going to bring that wiki to life in a different way, or make sure that the fans understand that this is part of a platform where they can get more, where they can explore other IP. And so as we think about that in the balance, we do test a lot of things. We test a lot of things with the creators, the admins and editors, around things like trivia, things like polls, things like maps that map out different levels or worlds in a game, or all the different families in Game of Thrones. Like, what are the ways that we can make this community stronger, more vibrant, as well as what are the ways that you want to explore and expand if we share Robert Downey Jr. is Iron Man. Robert Downey Jr. is also in Sherlock Holmes, another world that you may enjoy, right? And so how we do that is a very delicate balance of making sure that our creator or admin editor audience is happy with those tools, feels like they want to contribute and help build all of those different pieces as well, and that our audiences and fans are finding that valuable relative to the content that they directly came for. So we do a lot of research. to try to figure out how and where we get involved and how that affects both our contributors and our fans, because we are a dual-sided platform.
Yeah. You know, you said a really interesting couple words near the beginning of that, which is you started talking about what are the features, but essentially, what are the changes to the product that we need to make that facilitate these communities and the sharing of these communities? And it's interesting because generally, like if you were to look at, say, our CMO, right? It's like, take the product we have, go and sell it, right? That's your job. And your role in a lot of ways, it sounds like you're actually having an impact, which makes sense. It's like an old growth hacking tactic, right? But more complex in this scenario, which is you're thinking about how to change the product itself to help make it grow, not just how do we take what already exists and market that. Is that correct? Am I reading that right?
Oh, for sure. We didn't talk about this as much, but my background is in research and insights and analytics. And the reason that I went into that is because I was just really interested in what resonates with consumers, with fans, with healthcare purchasers, the cereal eaters, whatever the product or service is. And how do we make sure that we're creating products and services that meet the needs of those audiences and then talk about them right in the right ways to make sure that it's clear that what we're doing is meeting those needs for those audiences. And so we play a big role in the research and analytics team as part of my team here is understanding who are the segments of our audiences, what are the use cases or reasons that they're coming to us today on Fandom, on GameSpot, on Fanatical. How do we best meet those needs within the features that we're building, what our site or platforms look like, how we help them navigate those experiences. So the design and the flow of the page, you can think on our commerce site and business, what the product page and flow looks like. Do they need to see a video in order to be convinced that this is the right game for them? Do they prefer text? Are they more concerned with the Trustpilot rating that shows that we're a site where they can trust the game key that they're buying? What are the components that are driving the conversion, right? And their interest in buying that product from us? And then how do we make that as easy as possible? So helping to work on shopping cart flow, cross sells and upsells and all of those pieces. So part of my team is also, besides working on insights and user research and product analytics around our tests, is also then product marketing of how that actually is communicated throughout the platform, in addition to the external, you know, marketing levers and channels as well. But yes, we're definitely involved throughout the whole experience, and we partner with every other team within the organization.
You know, I had missed a whole other angle to this, and a whole other constituency, which makes it even more complex, which is like, you've got LucasArts or Disney or these gaming companies. You have people that own the IP. If this is their most passionate fan base, like this is where they're spending their time. And ultimately, I would imagine has a big impact on the sales of those companies, right? Like how they actually generate revenue. Do you interact with that? I have to imagine you interact with them. What does that relationship look like with that group? With the brands and the ones that are actually being talked about?
Yeah, so we do have interaction with them in a lot of different ways, which is pretty interesting because, as you mentioned, we're actually a really important promotional vehicle for them.
Like, yeah, for it's hugely experience. Important. Yeah, very for the most passionate people.
Exactly. And like you think about something like The Witcher, as an example, Netflix show, where we have an official partnership with Netflix. The Witcher is a show. I'm personally afraid of it, so I do not watch it.
I watched a season of it. It's pretty intense.
But I've heard it's amazing. And also very complex. So something like The Witcher, where if you watch two episodes and you still don't really understand what's happening, and there's 1,000 other shows being recommended to you by friends and family and on your streaming services, you might not keep watching that show. But if you can find a place that easily explains and connects the dots for you of what's going on, you stick with that show, right? Because you enjoy it more. So the value of Fandom for the studios is incredible. You know, I used to, when I worked at NBC, one of the main things that people asked for was like storylines and plot lines so that they could like follow along or catch up. Like the last season ended, they don't remember what happened. And that our focus was always on video, like letting them actually stream the show and less so on, you know, all of the content of what was in each episode. But Phantom plays that role. So we do have official partnerships with studios, gaming studios, television, movie studios, to make sure that that content is there and available in advance. So if it's a new show, obviously there's nothing written in advance of people streaming the first episode. So how do we get that content up there, or it, if you will, to make sure that right away there's a reference source for fans who want to get into it? So that's one important way. Another important way that we work with studios is on the data front. So, you know, you are, let's say, taking a game and developing it into a television show, which is happening now every single day. They really the new source for television content creation. It used to be more books and comics, and now we've kind of moved into the era of gaming, which is amazing. But we know every character, weapon, level, Easter egg, every component of that game that people have been interested in for 20 years, right? And we can share that, as well as an understanding of the overlap with Hulu subscribers, because we know every show they're watching and what they're interested in, right? So we have, hands down, the best data to help inform how they develop that content. So we work with a lot of studios and gaming studios, television studios on what they should even buy, what's the right fit for their portfolio when they do, how to create content that's going to be appealing to the audience of the game as well as of their existing service, and how those things intersect so we can see across everything. And so we provide a ton of valuable insight throughout that process. Then who is the audience? How do you market to them? And then we obviously work with them on, and here's how you can reach them on our platform in the right way at the right time, which is our advertising sales business. So we really work with the studios and brands kind of across all of the pieces of that puzzle, which is super interesting.
It is going to be fascinating to watch the role that you guys play in the coming years from an AI perspective, given the amount of proprietary information, data, opinions, content, et cetera, just because that's the input, right? That's the input to a ChatGPT, or, you know, obviously to the studios as well for their actual content. I'd be shocked if you guys aren't acquired by like a Google or a Microsoft in the next like 5-10 years. That's so cool. Another area that I think from a marketing perspective that's interesting is this idea of in-person. So obviously communities and fandom are online, but I think bringing people together in real life forges a different type of connection. Some would argue a more meaningful connection, or at least it closes that loop, right? It can be a very exciting time for people. So I know you do a lot of this at Comic-Con and other small regional events. Is that a big area of investment for you, especially coming out of the pandemic? I have to imagine it's part of it. How do you think about the kind of the in-person interactions of these online communities?
Yeah, so I'm a huge believer and I guess like lover of live events and experiences. I think that there isn't a more impactful way to really get into and immerse yourself in and celebrate your fandoms. Mm-hmm. Having been at and in a lot of those experiences, it's like nothing else. And I really don't think you can create that feeling and that connection digitally. When you find people who love the worlds that you love, showing up as your favorite characters, collecting that, you know, unique, hard to find item that's gonna delight you every day, you know, when you get back home, that's really important and a big part of celebrating that fan identity. We, therefore, you know, want to be a part of a lot of those experiences, and we show up at a lot, you know, fan conventions and experiences. San Diego Comic-Con, which you mentioned, is a great example of that. We do the opening night party at San Diego Comic-Con every year, And we bring team members, we send community team members. We have of our creators, our admins and editors, we have something called the STAR program, where, you know, some of the benefits of being in the STAR program is getting to go to some of these events and connect in real life with others, admins and editors, meet some of the creators of the shows in person and be part of that experience, which is really fun. And we usually activate and amplify through our partners. So for example, this year at San Diego Comic-Con, we partnered with Paramount and with EA. And number one, obviously, they're trying to do the same thing and engage and celebrate fans, but they also bring really fun pieces to the activation where they can bring clothing from shows, they can bring interactive gaming experiences into the actual party. We do themed food and beverage. They bring talent as well to the gold carpet that we call it. And so it really brings like an authenticity and fun into the experience to bring it to life, as opposed to just a party that you can come drink at. It really feels like you're celebrating these worlds together. So that's a really fun component of that. We have a great partnership with DreamHack, which is a gaming convention with gaming competitions and, you know, helping to celebrate that energy and excitement as well. Again, showing up with partners there. So it's a very big part of our strategy of connecting in real life with fans, with our partners, and being part of those amazing experiences.
Yeah, I agree. I think that like connecting in person in live events is just much more powerful than people realize. At times, it's hard to measure the impact, of course. I remember when we first started, I read, it was Benioff's book at Salesforce. And it was like, I didn't actually like about half the book, but there were some sections in there that were really good. And one of them was they'd done all these different marketing activations. And when they really looked at it, they'd run like ads in the New York Times and all this stuff. It basically came down to two things. It was either when he was in the press talking about this move to online CRM versus on-prem CRM, or it was when they got their customers and their prospects in the same room, and then their customers sold their prospects. And that's an event, right? So that's what we need to do. And that's where Dreamforce, and they have like probably the largest in-person on the ground event group in, at least in the software industry. So anyways, I'm a huge fan. And actually on that topic, while we're on this topic of kind of customers and prospects, so we went through a really interesting, and Brenna suggested this question. I'm really glad she suggested it. So we've made a big revamp to our marketing maybe 3 or 4 months ago. The effects are gangbusters. Like it's wild. It's really good. And the big shift in focus we made was people like, oh, we need to help new business. We need to go out and get new customers. And so they focused all their efforts on new customers. And I was like, guys, like, let's look at this for a second. Number one, if you're to look at our revenue next year, 70% of it's going to come from our existing customers. It's about 70%. And then of the remaining 30%, if you actually look at it, of that 30% that's new, 70% of that is either a direct referral from an existing customer, or it's an existing customer bringing us with them to a new company. So that means that 90% of our revenue next year is going to come directly from our customers. And that's what we know. I'm sure that the other 10% is probably, you know, had heard about us or, you know, whatever. And so the way that you actually get new customers is you do a really good job of driving engagement with your existing customer base. And so I know that seems like an area that you're possibly passionate about, this idea of driving like deep customer engagement and loyalty and marketing's role that that plays. And I think this is one of the most misunderstood concepts about marketing, is they assume that it's about just going out and getting new people to you. So talk to me a little bit about your perspective on that. I'd love to hear it.
So I love everything you said, and we'll get along very well. I can tell.
We've got the same shows, you have the same marketing.
I think you're very smart. I love everything you're saying. Yeah, I totally agree with you, because I think there's this, and it's one of the things that we talk about, right? Even like the ANA CMO growth councils of like, what's a CMO? What's the role of marketing? And, you know, there was recently a McKinsey study that came out about like, what if CEOs think marketing is? What if CMOs think marketing is? And the answer is marketing is a lot of things. Marketing is more things than any other function. Marketing is the hardest job. And I don't say just because it's what, you know, I happen to do, but, you know, I sometimes, you know, say like in finance, and I love our CFO, we're very, very close, but it's like there's a P&L. There's a P&L. We build the budget. You've got two choices of frames, LIFO, FIFO, you know, and you basically pick one and you do it. And then you like manage the budget, you make sure people are paying, and you make sure that, you know, you're getting paid, right? There's like accounting and finance, right? There's like
structure, process.
There's a lot of structure. And if you look at any company, the variation in what sits inside of a finance team and how they operate and run good process, there's probably 5 to 10% variation.
Yeah,
with marketing, there's like 95% variation.
You don't want experimental accounting. I don't want an experimental accounting.
Correct. Correct. Exactly. And no one's been like, all right, well, EBITDA does it, you know, we're going to get rid of depreciation. That's not relevant anymore. It's going to be relevant for the rest of time. So marketing is very challenging because things are changing all the time. And because every business is different in terms of how you think about what your opportunities are for audience. And I don't say like audience growth, I say like audience, because when I think about a marketer's main job or considerations is you bring people in, you keep them around, you bring them back, right?
Yep.
Or acquisition, engagement, retention.
Well, and referral is the one after that, right?
What?
Acquisition, engagement, retention, and then referral, right? Because those people that stick around are ultimately what gets you the new acquisition as well. It becomes a circle, right?
Totally, right. You know, referral is an acquisition strategy, right?
Yeah.
To get new people into the funnel. So when you think about those things, and obviously you want to do all of them really, really well.
Yeah.
Most, you know, organizations aren't focused on all of those pieces. Like, you know, I'll give you an example. Like, you know, you look at the streamers when they all launched right before and at the beginning of COVID, like they're in a race to acquire audiences, to get as many subscribers as they could. Doesn't matter how much money they lost a lot of it, and many of them continue to, but they were like, let's just build up the subs. We're going to get credit for having subscriber growth. That's what the market's reacting to.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the market's like, we'd rather you be profitable. We'd rather you think about like how you're actually engaging those audiences and retaining them in cost-effective ways, right? So how do you manage your portfolio to make sure that you're still engaging your audiences and maybe even doing that better, as opposed to just spending lots of money to bring new people into the funnel? Like, let's focus there. So they've been shifting their attention. But as I think about like our brands and where the opportunities are, and I'll give you Fandom as an example. Fandom is a brand that does really, really well at acquisition because everyone loves entertainment and gaming and TV shows and what we do in the shadows, and they are searching for those things. It's ubiquitous consumer behavior. They have questions. They want to know, you know, where to watch it, whatever it may be. And we're already showing up first. So we're getting those audiences. It's the reason we have 300 million people every month without them directly knowing about or coming to Fandom. So we're getting all these people, which is great. And we're getting them for free, right? Free in that, obviously, we spend a ton of money on maintaining the platform and server costs and all of those things, but that's, you know, overhead. But what we then need to do, and where we're really focused for a Fandom perspective, is that engagement. And so you kind of go through phases as brands. I always focus first on engagement and then retention, because if the people aren't engaged in what you have to offer when they get to you, the likelihood of them coming back is lower because they haven't seen as much value. So if you can build engagement, a reason to stay, then you're much more likely to make them want to come back and to use the CRM lever to say, did you love this experience? You know, sign up for notifications, sign up for email, you know, right, whatever. And so we're really focused on engagement and a lot of the things you talked about earlier with, you know, how and where do we insert ourselves into those communities or change and optimize the platform. We have a real eye towards how do we create a more engaging experience. So they're coming to us automatically because they have a question. How do we turn that question into another question or a different reason that they want to engage or test their knowledge or see a review for the game that was built on that world and on that franchise? And so how do we connect those dots? So I would always rather have an incremental page view from an existing user than a new user. So if I've got one user that consumes five pages or five users that consume one, I want the one that consumes five and I want that sixth before I want a sixth visitor, right? Yep. Because I've already got that audience. And so the decisions and the resourcing and the areas of focus are very different from fandom than they would be for a brand that's starting with zero audience, right?
Yep.
And so those are the considerations and things that we think about across our brand and where we are and how important each of those different parts of the journey are at that moment in time for each brand. And I think it's really important, especially this day and age where there's so much focus on managing cost and efficiency, of making sure that you're focused on the parts of your business and fighting for and making sure that the rest of the executive team and company is aligned with how we are driving that growth. And it sounds like you've been having those conversations. I think everyone does, but that it's not just about bringing in new customers. Sometimes more of the value is creating more value from each of those customers. And what you do is very different. Right.
There's a finite number of people in the world, right? If you're churning through them, eventually you run out. And I think that, again, getting back to this, like 70% of the way that we get new customers is from our existing customers that we know of. It may be even higher. And I think as you get more ubiquitous, as you get bigger, that percentage goes up, not down, right? Like how many people sign up for Salesforce without ever having used Salesforce or talking to somebody that's used Salesforce? It's probably 0%, 1%. It's very low. Anyways, I am so glad we got to connect and I'm already running over my time. And so I really want to say thank you for taking the time. I'm so glad we got to meet each other and I think find a kindred spirit in the marketing world, which is amazing. I was going to make you rank your children behind you, but we've run out of time, so I won't make you do that. But thank you so much. I'm so glad we got to chat, Stephanie.
Thank you so much. And just so you know, the size of the picture is usually my ranking.
So, okay. All right, there you go. That's it. That answers it. Well, thanks again, Stephanie. I'll talk to you
soon. Thank you.
Be a friend, tell a friend, and subscribe. Earned by Creator IQ. Creator IQ is your all-in-one solution to grow, manage, scale, and measure your influencer marketing program. Ready to unlock the power of the creator economy? Get started with a demo today at creatoriq.com.